Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 12th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Good to have you here. So, D.R., a year ago, seems like just yesterday, but a year ago now, there were many marches in the United States to protest various things, all of them seemingly connected with our current authoritarian president. We had the March for Women. We had various kinds. One of the marches we had last year was the March for Science. This year, we've had a big march called March for Our Lives, which has to do with gun violence. But this coming weekend on 4/14, Saturday the 14th of April, will be a March for Science in downtown Boston at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Did you see anything about that?
Yes, there's been some coverage, although seemingly not as much as there was for last year's science march about this event. Mm-hmm. And you know, considering that there's an administration that's marching against science, anytime that people stand up and say that, you know, it is time that science has its rightful place in public policy, that's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, there is no planet B, as Senator Ed Markey is fond of saying. So you need to have on this planet some respect for science.
Right. Well, the details, if you live in the Boston area or within striking distance of Boston, the details are that the event will be held in Columbus Park, which is that park down near the aquarium. It's right across from Faneuil Hall, so you can get all the good food that you want in Faneuil Hall and go down to Columbus Park. It'll be from 1 to 3 in the afternoon on, did I say Sunday? It's a Saturday. It's Saturday the 14th, right? Yeah. So here I am pushing. I'm not sure which day of the weekend it is. I believe that it is Saturday the 14th. And so check March for Science 2018. Almost positive it's Saturday the 14th. It's going to be at Columbus. I'm very sure it's at Columbus Park. I apologize for being so uncertain, but there's an event there, and the event will be in support of basically this year. The March for Science will be talking about climate change, which of course is often the lead issue when people try to denigrate science. But of course, this year we've seen things like the denigration of the CDC not being able to study handgun violence and things like that. Anyway, this year's march, we're going to be talking about bills that are in front of the Massachusetts State House that you can actually come out and make your voice heard on. Some of those bills we've talked about before, but I just wanted to kind of list up the top three. There's a bill in front of the put in the State House recently supported by the Conservation Law Foundation, right? And it is basically the intent of it is to formalize Massachusetts policy to ratify, to make legal protections for environmental justice. That, as you may or may not know, and the right to a healthy environment is built into the Massachusetts Constitution. There is an amendment that guarantees all Massachusetts citizens a clean environment, basically. But that does not always get fairly distributed. And in particular, the kind of example that is in the press release by the Conservation Law Foundation is a hearing that was held last November in the town of Chelsea, which had to do with some dirty Eversource facility being put in the middle of their town. And of course, the whole hearing was conducted in English, whereas when many of the people who would be directly affected, English was not their primary language. And so there was no requirement that sort of critical information that would impact the neighborhood be provided in a language that's accessible to the people that are there. And there are other examples of how to guarantee that the people who tend to people who live in neighborhoods that have less political power that tend to get forced to accept the dirtiest siting facilities and the most environmentally ugly facilities, right? That tends to happen in poor neighborhoods. And that's an environmental injustice. And so there is a law there to at least begin to force the process to be more respectful of all the parties involved, particularly people that have traditionally been hurt by this environmental justice issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that's a right direction for the state to go, DR?
I absolutely do. And as you mentioned, the issue of environmental justice, we can connect this to the March for Science and push back against some of the attacks on the March for Science that came up last year. And if you notice online, they're coming up this year. The idea that the march is somehow ideological and partisan, and that is the biggest bunch of baloney in the world. Mm-hmm. The attacks on science are ideologically driven. The attacks on the concept of environmental justice are ideologically driven. So if people push back in defense of science and in defense of environmental justice, they are not themselves ideologues. They are responding to ideological attacks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that has to be emphasized.
There's ideology hiding in a lot of places, and the idea that science should not be utilized in a rational society, or that people should not be allowed to participate fully in the process of deciding how environmentally impactful decisions are made, is an ideological threat, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say, while you were speaking, DR, I checked, and honest to God, it is Saturday, April 14th. So no two ways about it. Saturday, April 14th. I think I said Sunday in the beginning, but it's Saturday, April 14th, 1 to 3 in Christopher Columbus Park in downtown Boston for that march. Please go to it.
If you think about it, this issue is so important, there should be a two-day march.
We could march both days. No problem found. But I think that the question of the laws that would enforce environmental justice are ones that we should be thinking about. There was an article in the Globe, I think it was just yesterday, talking about the city of Somerville. Of course, if you're familiar at all with Boston, you know that Route 93 North goes right through the middle of Somerville. Once you cross the Zakin Bridge, it just blasts right up the road. And that the neighborhoods surrounding Route 93, of course, are subject to continuous, you know, emissions, and aside from the noise and whatnot from Route 93, all the particulate emissions, all the bad stuff that comes out of the cars is right there in those neighborhoods, and those people have not very much political power to shift things back. Somerville can be tony in some of its neighborhoods now because it's a very up-and-coming place, but some of the neighborhoods close by the highway are not, and that's another example of the kind of environmental injustice that we want to strive to avoid. Right?
Mm-hmm. Certainly a justification for cleaner vehicles on the roads.
Absolutely, right. I mean, and there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, isn't there? I guess the second bill that's in front of the State House that is up for consideration is Governor Baker's bill. We talked a little bit about it last week, but it's a big bill. There are some good things and some bad things. So let's say the bad thing first is that this idea of trying to address the question of peak power demand during the hottest days of the summer and somehow using that as a excuse to allow natural gas plants to build pipelines, that's a bad thing. And it's not clear to me that's what the governor intended. It needs to be cleared up. But the good thing that the governor has proposed is that there should be requirement scaling up into the early 2020s, I think, a requirement that when you sell a home in Massachusetts, it have an energy scorecard to tell you how efficient that home is. And that is a very good thing because it allows people to take advantage of the good work they've done in trying to improve the energy efficiency of their home. And it alerts people who might buy a house that is leaky and not very energy efficient. So it's a way of incorporating clean energy policies into the real estate market, which is a good deal. I don't know if you saw anything about that, DR,
Indeed, it's now I know in when these issues have come up about more, about having more energy efficient housing and having it indicated on houses how energy efficient they are. You know, certain real estate interests get a little irritated by
hinky.
That. But it'll be interesting to see if climate activists can sort of, you know, push back successfully against the irritation of said interests.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that you can paint a case that any burden on the sale of a house will hurt people. So, for example, suppose you are not well-to-do enough to do a lot of energy efficiency work. Well, yeah, that could be a problem, but there are programs to help people introduce that energy efficiency stuff into their homes with the support of the Mass Save program. But generally speaking, the idea that a house be ranked like an automobile has a miles per gallon sticker, your house should have some idea of how energy efficient your house is, because it's only going to become more and more important going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The other bill, though, that the one I'm really excited about and think that hopefully there'll be some discussion of, is what's called the Pacheco bill. This is the omnibus energy bill that's before the Senate right now, and this is basically a dream list for climate hawks. It has all kinds of good stuff in it about mandating renewable energy portfolio increases that keep legally increasing the responsibility to have more and more clean energy generated by the utilities. It has stuff about electric vehicles. It has stuff about, in fact, it even has a carbon price buried in it, that somehow the state will be asked to develop a carbon pricing scheme, which really is, you know, how we close every podcast here, to talk about putting a price on carbon, putting a price on carbon pollution, somehow including that pollution in the price of doing business for things. So the Pacheco bill is another great opportunity for people to come out and speak in support of these bills at the large rally on Saturday the 14th in Christopher Columbus Park in downtown Boston from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. I don't think I can be any clearer about it than that, right, TR? If you want, check out the Mass Climate Action events page. There's a MCAN is sponsoring this along with other organizations like the Better Futures Project. And so I intend to be there. Come by and say hello. So there's that. The science march. I guess the other continuing debacle, DR, that's out there is our EPA administrator, who seems to have weathered the storm of last week, where he just had so many horrible, egregious corruption things come up. But I think, I guess from Scott Pruitt's perspective, it's just as well that the Russians dropped gas bombs in Syria, and that Mr. Mueller raided the attorney for the president, right? Because that kind of takes all the oxygen out of the Scott Pruitt story. But he is still a scoundrel, right? And he's continuing to have things that come up about him that are not good, right?
Mm-hmm. It is, and if from one perspective extraordinary, and from another perspective business as usual, the fact that Pruitt has been defended by a lot of the powerful right-wing interests and right-wing activists, including former Attorney General Ed Meese, writing a letter that a number of prominent right-wing activists signed on to, urging Trump to basically stand by Pruitt. There's a piece
Many people listening to this podcast might even not remember. It might not have been born when Ed Meese was Ronald Reagan's consigliere, right? I mean, he is no paragon of integrity and uprightness. So for him to be defending Scott Pruitt is a laugh. Anyway, sorry for interrupting. Please continue.
There was a piece, I believe, in Axios, in which it was reported that the strategy by these right-wing interests is to basically convince Trump that the opposition to Pruitt has nothing to do with ethics and everything to do with Al Gore sycophants basically trying to, you know, who are upset about what Pruitt is doing. And the other argument that Axios made reference to is the idea that if Trump backs down and no longer defends Pruitt, Trump will have no defense when when it's time for when the Mueller investigation gets really intense. So in other words, if Trump is willing to go to the mattresses for Pruitt, he's willing to go to the mattresses for himself and launch an all-out defense of Pruitt is essentially all-out defense of Trump. Uh-huh. And that therefore that somehow the people who think Pruitt is corrupt are the same people who think Trump is corrupt, and since Trump doesn't think he's corrupt himself, essentially
ergo ipso facto
the argument is that somehow the deep state is behind both trying to get rid of Trump and trying to get rid of Pruitt. So if he defends Pruitt, he's essentially defending himself.
Interesting. Well, I just find it's a point we were making before, DR, that the venal corruption that Scott Pruitt has exhibited in terms of having the sirens and the flashing light on top of his EPA vehicle so we could go to the French restaurant. I mean, mm-hmm. that corruption, it pales in comparison to the deeply damaging corruption of handing over the planet to the fossil fuel industries. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think that from a perspective of a take a deep breath and look at Scott Pruitt, all these things of whether Trump will stand by him or not, who knows? But the profound corruption is in what Scott Pruitt is willing to sell out the democratic process and the planet for the purposes of his ideological belief. I mean, it's terrible.
As David Bowie famously said, you're face to face with the man who sold the world.
Anyway, we got to put it down there. Yeah, let me. I would just say in passing that there will be a webinar that MCAN, the Mass Climate Action Network, will be holding a webinar to explain what a municipal light system is, a municipal light plant is and does. So if you have a utility that's owned by your home town, this is a good thing to listen into. It's on April 19th, and you can find the details at the MCAN website, massclimateaction.org/events. And you, of course, you can, at that same website, massclimateaction.org/blog, you can find the links we've talked about in this, the reading list for this show, and a link to the SoundCloud widget so you can listen to the show at our blog there. You can also find the show on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using almost any of the podcast distribution applications you can get now, like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, etc., etc. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hope to see you at Columbus Park on Saturday the 14th at 1 o'clock. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.